The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
All I want to say is that in my experience in healing from an abortion, there's a beautiful story of healing, of hope, of confirmation that she is a girl.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was a little clip from a caller. I was actually listening Friday morning as the Roe decision came out, turned on Relevant Radio, and there was a woman sharing with Patrick a little bit about her own abortion. I'm going to play just a little bit of it for you coming up because I think it's so important. You know, I tried to give you a look on Friday at the legal analysis and, you know, what the consequences of this will be, what we're going to see societally, where we go from here. We took a look at a lot of the temporal issues that are going to unfold. Today, I just want to look at the spiritual dynamic of that. We just talked about what spirits were at work, both, you know, at fomenting a culture of death and at the same time defeating it, right? And where do we go spiritually from here? But there's a lot of damage that's been done. And one of the great gifts of the Holy Spirit, one of the great manifestations of God's love for us is healing. And I really do believe that there are a lot of wounded people, male and female, from abortion that need healing, definitely need healing. And I want to talk about that coming up here. We'll take a little bit. I'm going to share a story with you, too, of a woman who I know. Never forget her story. It was really quite a powerful story, and it has stayed with me for years. I'll share that with you coming up. But let me share a little with you right now. I'll just give you a snapshot from the other day. This is Amy from California sharing her post-abortive healing just on the heels of that Supreme Court decision. Listen.
I want to offer hope, and I want to let people know that there is healing. If, you know, because obviously, I mean, we live in a world where every day you turn on the news, I don't care what outlet you're listening to, and especially now where they're talking about abortion. And remember, when you have a wound and the doctor has to go in and fix it, it hurts. And some people don't want to touch that wound because of that. All I want to say is that in my experience in healing from an abortion, there's a beautiful story of healing, of hope, of confirmation that she is a girl. My children have had experiences that healing is available. I did some one-on-one counseling at a Catholic church. I didn't know about Project Rachel back then, but I know that there are so many resources today to help parents. So I just want to, from the deepest place of my heart, just to invite any parent out there that is struggling. God forgives you. He will forgive you. There is healing. There are people to talk to. You can reconcile. You don't have to live with that constant guilt. It's just there. And that's really what I want to say today.
And it goes on and on. But I just thought her story, her message is an important one. And she's not alone. It's 50 years now, right? We had somewhere, 65 million surgical abortions, who knows how many others from abortifacients and things along those lines. But the damage from this, it goes beyond the baby. We all know that. I'll leave that issue alone. The ripple effect of this action, it reaches out to every level of our society. And I think we're only now beginning to recognize the effects of this. And I'm not talking about physical effects. You know, there's all these links to cancer, but I'm talking about the psychological damage manifested in what's called post-abortive syndrome. And the evidence for this is just mounting, right? There are women who suffer a battery of problems as a result of the mistake that they made. And my heart goes out to them. I have such love and compassion for any woman who's made that mistake, any man who got, you know, wrangled up in that as well. You may see this, you know, you might know somebody who suffered from depression after this. They have high rates of suicide. They struggle with alcoholism or drug abuse. A lot of women find themselves in dysfunctional relationships. They suffer higher rates of divorce, right? They're in these codependent relationships. So this goes on. We're only now as a nation, I really believe this, beginning to see the effects that this is having on the next generation. And I think we need to do everything we can to help women who are suffering from this. We do. I know this woman. Her name is Yvonne. And I think she shared her story publicly. So, Yvonne, I'll send you a big shout out there. Her name's Yvonne Florzak Seaman. And I remember her being on the air with me years ago. And I was stunned by her story. And I'll just share part of it with you. I think it's well worth hearing. She told me that by the time she was 20 years old, think about where you were at 20, right? By the time she was 20 years old, she had her fifth abortion. Number five, by the time she was 20. Her first one was at the age of 16. It just boggles the mind. Five abortions, 4 years. The first four left her with psychological effects. She couldn't figure out. She didn't know. But she said to me, she said, "Drew, I felt this void. I was depressed. I was only 20 years old. I wanted to die. Something was missing. I didn't know what was wrong with me." So she gets pregnant. This is after four abortions. She's pregnant with her fifth. She's going in for her fifth abortion right now, right? And right when she was going in for this fifth abortion is when the slogan, and I talk about words a lot on this radio program, when the slogan of choice became very suspicious to her, right? Because she was in complete denial of the truth. 8 weeks of pregnancy turned into nine, right? And then her ninth week turns into 10. And then a few weeks later, she finally says, "I have to go get this abortion." And she was very familiar with the routine. It wasn't the first time she was there. She goes into this locker room, she says. She undressed. She sat down on a bench. When she got there, there were about 15, I don't know, maybe 20 other girls who were waiting for their number to be called. I mean, how cold is that, right? But she said, "You know, this time was a little different. When my number was called," she's like all the other, "you know, I kind of wiped away the tears from my eyes, and I followed this nurse into the room, and the nurse told me to lie down because..." Yeah, she didn't have much time. "Lie down." And suddenly a man doctor walks in, starts the procedure. And she said she just assumed he was a doctor. He never introduced himself. He just came in to perform this procedure, never even addressed her, right? Didn't try to console her, talk to her, just went right to work. She said she felt a pain, surgically speaking, this time she never felt before, right? She told him, stop, that hurts, stop. And he got really angry at her. And in a loud voice, he says, "This is a second term gestation. This is 13 or 14 weeks. I need more money for this procedure." And he got up, and I'm not kidding you. This is what she told me, right? I would find this hard to believe if it didn't come from her. He walked out of the room. He left the room, her legs in stirrups, right? So she turned and she asked the nurse, "Well, what's he talking about? I don't know what's going on. Help me. What's..." And the nurse asked her, "Well, do you have any more money, honey, you know, sweetheart? You know, is there somebody here with you?" And Yvonne said, "Yeah, my boyfriend, he's in the waiting room. He brought me, he's waiting for me." The nurse went out, talked to him, and sent him out, I guess, to get more money. A short time later, he returned with the money that the doctor needed. The additional $150 was paid to the nurse. And then the doctor came back in the room, again, in a very cold way, told her, "Put your feet up." And the man went back to the procedure. Different procedure this time. With this procedure, he used, she said, bigger instruments, stronger, louder vacuum, a bigger hose. And please forgive me. I'm going to stop for a second here. I don't want to hurt anybody with these words. I know this could, you might have gone through this, and I just want you to know that God loves you. And, you know, if you found, you know, forgiveness, then no, God forgives you totally. His mercy is there for you if you haven't. If you're Catholic, you haven't been to confession. I just want to say return. But this is the reality of what happens. And I don't want to sugarcoat it. I don't want to dance around it. I want to share her story the way it is. But I don't want to cause anyone pain. I'll just share just a moment more, and then I'll share with you what happened afterwards. But he finishes. Let's just put it that way. You know, and Yvonne, well, as he was finishing, Yvonne screamed again. She said, "Please stop. I changed my mind. Please stop." He had turned this vacuum on, and he barked back at her. She says, "It's too late now. Just lay back. Don't move because you'll hurt yourself." She said the tone of his voice was very cold and very clear. And when he finished, he told the nurse, "Hurry up and clear up the mess. I got another procedure," right? So Yvonne, at this point in time, she felt victimized. She felt violated. It was as though those blinders came off her eyes. And she told me that after she left the clinic, she She was convinced that she had survived the inconceivable, and she made an oath on that day at the age of 20 years old that she would never enter another abortion clinic again. But then something happened. Something that would forever change her life. 3 days after leaving the clinic, she began the hemorrhage. And she was bleeding so profusely, she had to go to the ER. She ended up in the emergency room. When she arrived at the ER, they asked her what's wrong. And she said, I had an abortion about 3 days ago. And you know, it was just a simple medical procedure. But the bleeding wouldn't stop. The bleeding just has not stopped. And she's like, I've had abortions before. I had four other ones. And this has never been a problem. Never happened before. And then the nurse asked her, well, how many have you had? How many abortions have you had? And Yvonne, again, 20 years old, said, this is my fifth. The nurse then proceeded to tell her that they ran some tests and they determined that, well, unfortunately, the baby had not been completely removed and that, you know, she was going to need a D&C. And Yvonne says, when she said the word baby, I said, what baby? What are you talking about, baby? There's no baby in there. It's just a blob of tissue. You know, a fetus, not a baby. It's just a fetus. It's just tissues, right? Just cells. The nurse immediately realized what she had said. She used the word baby and quickly changed her verbiage. You know, went to medical technology at that point in time and tried to be more, you know, sterile about it, if you will, more vague. It's too late, though. At that moment, Yvonne said she realized for the first time in her life what had happened and why the last 4.5 years were just such a painful void for her. She said, suddenly it all made sense. All the missing pieces of my life brought about by this so-called, quote, choice, were finally starting to be revealed to me. My depression, my desire to die. I had this feeling I was missing something, but I didn't know what that something was. She says, that abortion, you know, along with the four previous abortions, it started a lifelong journey of so many unanswered questions like, you know, why are they saying a choice protects a woman? Why are they saying this is a choice? And am I all alone? Am I the only one who feels this way? Or do other women question this idea of choice? Well, why aren't women accurately informed about what the so-called choice really is? So in the days to follow, it's not like she got better. In the days to follow, she thought she'd take her life. She wanted to kill herself. She turned to suicide. She figured nobody would miss me. She told me, I'm 20. I haven't contributed anything to society other than five dead babies. Given the opportunity, you know, I would never be forgiven anyway. I'd never be forgiven for the choice I made and what I did. My children wouldn't forgive me for the decision I made about their lives. And this poor woman, this poor girl, she would deal with years of guilt and shame and anger and regret. Like so many others, she would go on to battle depression and just these horrible, endless bouts of crying. And she abused drugs and alcohol and ended up in that dysfunctional relationship I talked about with both men and women, right? And she said, you know, Drew, as a post-abortive woman, both pro-choice and pro-life advocates have looked at me like I'm a failure. The pro-choice want me to be silent on the issue. They don't want me talking about this. It's a trillion-dollar business. You know, if women like me start talking about it, maybe some other women might change their minds and abortion will be exposed and it'll be viewed differently. And pro-lifers, they believe that I deserve to live the pain of the truth. And that's not really true. That's how she perceived it, because I think pro-lifers are the most compassionate people in the world. I mean, we're here for you, for anyone who aborted a child, and for the child itself. She goes, from the time of my first abortion to the time of my healing finally started taking place, 19 years were lost before I could even embrace the truth. But in this journey, in this quest for truth, she says, I've come to this horrible realization that I was given the legal right to end the life of my five children. It was legal. I was given this. I was given a legal right to terminate the lives of my five children, my five babies. Words will never, they will never express the pain of not knowing who they would have become who they would be today. I mean, it's a horrible story. My heart goes out to her. But today, I want you to know this woman, and she's a strong woman. She has found healing. She is the mother, I think, of four, maybe five children now. She says her greatest regret is that her five children's deaths are not in vain. You know, the pain of their deaths, the pain that it once caused, is giving others strength to accept, you know, the forgiveness and the freedom to embrace life. But, you know, her story is not unique. Yvonne is just one story amongst so many others. You have a story, or your sister does, or your daughter does, or your niece does, or your grandchild does. I believe so many women, they make this decision not because they want to. They make it because they don't know the truth, like Yvonne. They do it because they're pressured. They do it because they don't feel they have any other choice. They do it because they've been fed a lie by the Prince of Lies, and they have swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. That's why. That's why what we're seeing unfold today is just so important. That's why we're in a new chapter in our country, right? Roe is no more. Let's thank God for that. Let's rejoice in that. But we have to continue to offer compassion. We have to help those who have nowhere to turn. We need to let pregnant women know, we love you. We love your child. We'll help you. There are resources. You're going to be okay. Your child's a blessing. We need to educate and inform. We need to proclaim the truth in a culture that has grown deaf to the truth. We should never stop doing that. Never. I remember Yvonne, she said this. She says, if I only knew the truth, you know, if women only knew the truth, things could be different. She says, I believe so many women today are deceived by the abortion lie. And I know, Drew, they feel the same way. They feel the same way. I came across some fascinating statistics years ago. It addressed why women have abortions. And, you know, the results really surprised me. And I've shared these on the air because I think this is very telling, okay? 1%, okay, 1% of all abortions, you know why they occur? 1%. Because of rape and incest? You would think it was a lot higher, right? 6% occur because of the potential health, you know, problems regarding either the mother or the child. But 92, 93%, 94%, right, of every abortion that occurs, it's really for social reason. The child's unwanted. It's inconvenient. It's going to ruin my life. I can't do this. I have a right to this. Body autonomy. We can go through the whole litany of things, right? Those stats are not only tragic, but they're preventable. They are preventable. But this is what that spiritual blindness breeds. That's what sin breeds. Dysfunction, sickness, right? We live in a culture of death. We live in a culture of death, but we are at a turning point. We're in a moment where Roe is no more, where life can be upheld, and thank God for those states that had trigger laws that are now defending life where this is no longer legal. We need to continue to work adamantly in those states that are making their state an abortion tourism state and are even paying women. We need to tell those companies that are paying to send women to these places that are supporting Planned Parenthood, no more. You're damaging these women. You're destroying life. There's a ripple effect from this. Don't think abortion is just about the baby, because it's not. It is fundamentally. It's about this woman who suffered the ripple effects of the damages I just shared with you. And all those symptoms that follow. The inability to forgive yourself. The intense grief, the anger, the rage, that emotional numbness, that lowered self-esteem. You know, the depression, the bouts of crying, the anorexia, the eating disorders, the drug and alcohol abuse, the suicidal urges, the sexual problems, all of this stuff is a byproduct of post-abortion syndrome. You know, it's not just the woman either. Let me just have one final thought here, and we're going to speak to Catherine Glenn Foster. She's going to be joining me as well, and I'd love to hear your story too. It's about the baby. It's about the mother. It's also about the father. But it's also about our country. John Paul II, you know, this great pope of ours, he warned America. He said that a nation that kills its own children, it's a nation without hope. Nation that kills its own children is a nation without hope. This is a man who battled the evils of communism, the horrors of Nazism, who saw firsthand what evil can produce. And he warned us, a nation that kills its own children is a nation without hope. Mother Teresa said that the fruit of abortion is nuclear war. We are in a new chapter in this country. We have to continue our fight for life. But most of all, we really need to let those who are in crisis pregnancies know they're loved and that we are there to help. I hope you'll support those crisis pregnancy centers around the country. I hope you'll educate. I hope your church will be involved. But we also have to help those women who've made the mistake. 65 million abortions. There's a lot of damage, a lot of hurt. And there's a group out there. There's several groups that help women and men who have made this mistake. And again, I go back to telling you, God loves you. God will forgive you. His mercy is greater. The greater the sinner, the greater the right you have to his mercy, said St. Faustina. That's what our Lord told her. There are great groups out there. When we come back, we'll talk with Catherine Glenn Foster about that. We'll take your calls, too. I'd love to hear your story. Feel free to join us. 888-914-9149. The conversation continues right after this.
Your virtual parish. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for letting me be part of your afternoon. It is so much fun hanging out with you. I'd love to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. If you're new to the show, set it to the station you're now listening to, or if you found us on the app, tell somebody else about it, or if you're listening online, bookmark that. Always good to be here with you. I try to always give you a look at what's unfolding, what the biggest news stories of the day are, the most important issues, and hopefully give you a moral perspective on those. And today, I thought, what an appropriate day for us both to give thanks and to rejoice. In the Dobbs decision, the end of Roe, we're seeing trigger laws enacted in states all across the union, but we're also seeing this woundedness and the sickness continue to be distributed. I was sharing a little bit earlier just about how many companies are supporting the culture of death still. And, you know, who's the byproduct of this? It's so many innocent women. And men. There was a study done by researchers at the University of Minnesota. They found that women who have had abortions, they have the data is off the charts. 81% of them had a preoccupation with the aborted child. Quite often on the anniversary of the death, that comes to mind. There have been flashbacks of the abortion. I was thinking about this. I was watching some news pieces the other day, and they were showing, abortion. They were showing you very liberal states, and they're showing you shots of the operating room or where the procedure room would take place and the stirrups and all the different things. And I'm thinking, they showed you the machinery. And I'm thinking, how many women did that just tear open their wounds? They have nightmares about what happened. They miss this child. And as I mentioned, there's increased use of alcohol, suicide, all sorts of other issues, the depression that comes with this. And men aren't alone either. They also are affected by this. Maybe we'll talk about that as well. But I want to invite into the conversation Catherine Glenn Foster. It's great to have her here with us today. She is right now the president and CEO of Americans United for Life. And they're a pioneer. They really are of the state-based model legislative strategies that have been in place. And like I said, we owe a debt of gratitude to everybody in this fight, from those who educated, to those who legislated, to those who protested, to those who prayed. And I just want to wish you just a blessed day, Catherine. I want to wish you just a heartfelt congratulations. I know you've been at this for a very long time, and this is a day we really should rejoice in, the fact that, Roe will be no more. The battle's not over. The need to help is not over, but I'd love to get your take before we talk about anything else on just how you feel today and whether you thought this would come.
It is a day for joy. It's a day for elation. It's a day for congratulations for all Americans, because with this decision, we all win. I knew that this day would come, and I expected that it would come before too long, because for 49 years, we didn't let it get to 50, for 49 years, legal scholars on the left and the right, the pro-lifers, but also the pro-choicers, the ones who favored abortion, they said that Roe was wrongly decided. They said that Planned Parenthood v. Casey in 1992, that case that upheld the core holding of Roe, that was wrongly decided, that they weren't grounded in the Constitution, and that they needed to be overturned and the issue returned to the people so that the people could vindicate human rights and defend the vulnerable. And that is exactly what this court saw. That's exactly what this court did. We have a long way to go. Our workload has just tripled, quadrupled, but we can take a minute. We can just take a step back, and with humility and with gratitude to our God, we can just say thank you, praise God, and let's carry on.
I love it. Yeah, and look, to that point, you know, we've got to give God thanks. The battle continues. You know, we still need to help those who are still blinded, still lost, who are still buying this culture lie, come to see the truth that life is has a dignity from the moment of conception through natural death, and it should be upheld and protected. We also have to help the women. You know, I've done a lot of legal analysis when this decision was being made and came down, and what we would see post, how it affects everything from the economy to state legislatures. The most important person to look at is the mother who lost her child. And I would love you to talk about that. Then we'll take a few phone calls. So many women suffer from that post-abortive syndrome, you know, and you can go through the litany of these things that women encounter, but there's been great success out there. I know a lot of women who've personally gone through these courses, Project Rachel or Rachel's Vineyard, and they've found a lot of healing. There is healing, and there are new beginnings out there. Can you speak to this? You know, there may be women who never thought about this, or maybe men who never heard of this. What are some of the symptoms that happened post-abortion? And I know they can manifest not necessarily even within a week. It could be years before women encounter some of this. And then ultimately, you know, how can one find healing?
They absolutely can manifest over weeks, months, years. For some of us, it's immediate. For some of us, we're just devastated from the moment that we're still on the table or we're walking out of that facility. For some people, it takes longer. Sometimes it's when they hold their first child or see an ultrasound or hear that a friend is pregnant, something like that, and it triggers. And it's gut-wrenching. It's incredibly difficult because we feel that joy for our friend or for our family or whatever it may be, but it just hits home for us just the truth about what we did. It hits home for us that we've experienced a loss, and there's a lot of complicated emotions there. Abortion has so many sequelae, so many after effects, and they include physical after effects that we could go into. They include emotional, psychological, spiritual, all these different kinds of effects. They include depression, suicidal ideation, suicide attempts, PTSD kinds of symptoms, where you're focused on that child. Personally, I had an abortion when I was 19. I always mark that the anniversary of when that baby was due. You know, and I think, okay, this year that baby would be learning how to drive. This year that baby would be maybe checking out college campuses, and we'd be going on a little, you know, mother-daughter or mother-son road trip across America. You know, all the different milestones that were meant, the kindergarten graduation, you know, all these different things. So we focus on that. Seeing children can be hard. Just all kinds of anxiety and depression and feelings and emotions that build up in us. And it's even worse because society does not accept what abortion is. It doesn't view abortion as a loss. It's telling us, oh, it's no big deal. It's a blob of tissue. It's a clump of cells. You know, it's just like getting a tooth pulled or like a tonsillectomy. You know, you should have no emotion about this whatsoever. Just go on with your life. And so for those of us who've had an abortion, when we actually do feel those feelings, it's hard to get that validation when society is telling us that we shouldn't care. And so there's a lot of different layers to the emotion, but there is healing out there. There's Project Rachel. Yep. And there's a study that that's called Forgiven and Set Free. There are so many studies and programs out there. There's healing through your local pregnancy center. There's healing through your parish or your church. There's so many options, and I think every woman and every man who's had an abortion experience should go and seek that out and get that healing, because once that burden is lifted off of your heart and off of your soul, mm-hmm. it is so freeing, and it is just the biggest blessing.
I don't know your story, and I appreciate you sharing it so openly with us. How did you find healing? How did you get involved from going, you know, having an abortion to now serving as the president and CEO of Americans United for Life? That's the opposite end of the spectrum, I would think. But God works in mysterious ways. I'd love to hear your story.
He sure does. I grew up in a pro-life family, but we didn't really talk about abortion specifically. I just knew that they were pro-life. They supported life. My best friend in Catholic school was pro-life, but we didn't talk about exactly what abortion was. And that's why I think it's so important that we talk about the sometimes hard facts. We actually get to know the truth about abortion and abortion law, and we get to know what's out there in terms of resources. So I grew up, I didn't know these things. I just knew that I supported life. 19 years old, I'm off at college. I find myself unexpectedly pregnant. Had no idea where to turn. The nurses in the health center didn't give me any kind of idea on resources or support or options or anything like that. And so I was left to kind of Google by myself at night and basically, you know, pregnant, what do I do? And what came up, fortunately now, what comes up are pregnancy centers, but back then I didn't see any pregnancy centers. I didn't know they existed. What came up were abortion facilities. So I made an appointment for that Saturday. I knew it'd have to be soon that I went in to deal with it, because I was bonding with my baby. I'm walking around campus in my boyfriend's oversized sweatshirt, talking to her. I named her. But I'm walking around. I made an appointment for that Saturday. I go through those doors, and from that moment, nothing was the same. Nothing restored my sense of choice or autonomy or power or empowerment or anything like that. They were stripped from me over and over. And so I go in, they do the ultrasound they have to do. And I said, can I see it? Because I don't know if I want this abortion. Just, let me see this screen. I want to know, what's inside me. And they said no, but that was against policy. We couldn't see our own child. And they just shuffled me on to the next room. It was just this assembly line process. And to cut a long story short, I'm lying on the table there waiting for the abortionist to come in. I have not even met him yet, but I'm lying on the table. And I just, there was this revelation. I knew that it was wrong. I knew that it was wrong for me. I knew that it was wrong morally. I knew that I needed to just get out of there, and that I needed to not have that abortion. And so I told them that. I said, I changed my mind, let me up. And instead of doing that, and sadly, this is a story I've heard from many other women who I've represented and met and known. Instead of doing that, they called for backup, and I ended up with a worker holding me down on each arm, a worker on each leg, and the abortionist came in, and the procedure was done. Yeah, just like that. It was fast. It was horrifying. I was trying to scream. They were trying to get me to shut up. There's no word really for the devastation and the trauma that you encounter when you feel and you know in the moment that a soul is being ripped out of you. And so I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to get up off the table. I didn't want to leave the building, because I couldn't imagine leaving the baby that I was supposed to protect and had not and had failed to protect. And so it was tough. I lay in bed for a week back at school. I didn't want to get up or do anything. And eventually I just, I'm an energetic person. I had to do something. So I got up. I didn't know that there was a pro-life movement out there. Had no idea. I just started trying to piece things back together. I told my mom after the fact, and she was so loving and so welcoming, and I knew I should have told her to begin with. Wow. And she would have been wonderful, just the way she always is. And she got me counseling. She got me into a program for healing, and I started to get better and to work through this. And then, fast forward, I don't even know, 5 years or so, 6 years. And I've been working, I've been, out trying to, you know, just live a life. And I got a calling, and it was to go to law school. I didn't know why. I started following it. I'm just doing what God's telling me to do. And it was during orientation. I'm sitting there in this orientation talk, and it was just on my heart. You are here to help women like you. You are here to save babies like yours and to make sure no one else is in that position. And so I didn't know there was a pro-life movement, but I quickly found one on campus at Georgetown, and they started connecting me with more and more people, and I've been doing this ever since. Really honored to be leading Americans United for Life. We've been at it for 51 years now. Wow. And wow. Have no intention of stopping.
Well, fantastic. We're so grateful for what you do, and I'm very moved by your story. Thank you for sharing that. My guest today is Catherine Glenn Foster. If you want to join us, I'll go to the phones in just a second. The number is 888-914-9149. We'd love to hear your story, or maybe you're going through a tough time, you need a little bit of advice or direction. We'd be glad to talk with you. Again, 888-914-9149. Before I go to the phones, I'm curious, just from a legal perspective, and I do want to talk about, you know, where people can find help, but I'm just curious about what happens with Planned Parenthood now? What happens in the future now that Roe has been overturned? How do you things see them playing out legally?
Well,
and financially, too. And financially.
Yeah, if, as Planned Parenthood said, abortion was really just 3% of their services, then they would continue and there'd
Great
be
point.
No real change, right? But instead, it seems that was wrong all along. And so we're seeing Planned Parenthood shutting down, abortion facilities, the independent facilities shutting down. We're seeing them, you know, rending their garments because they just can't imagine a world without legal abortion. We are seeing state after state ending abortion within their borders. We're seeing states calling special sessions. We're seeing states looking to see, you know, the ones that didn't already have a law in place that could just go into effect that had been, you know, enjoying for decades. We're seeing states saying, what can we do now? And so we've put together a battle plan for life for all those states so that we can tell them, here's what you do now. Here's the next step. And we're going to be, you know, in there with blue states, with purple states, with the red states. You know, how can we protect life even better within your state? And how can we support and empower and resource women? Because we know that the top three reasons why women choose abortion, first trimester all the way through late term, the abortion industry's own studies tell us this, it's the same three reasons. It's financial issues, it's relationship problems, and it's not feeling ready to be a parent. And all of those are areas where we as a humane society, where we as parishes, we as communities, we can come alongside those women and those partners and those families, and we can help them, and we can resource them and empower them and help them learn their proper place and help them learn how to choose life and their role in the community. And it can be such a beautiful thing. And that's what we're working towards. We're working towards a holistic, life-affirming America where we can all thrive.
Well, I'm excited. There's a brighter future for America, a real victory for life, a real defeat for the kingdom of darkness. And I'm excited about what the future holds. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, Catherine, Dr. Fritz is on the line, Mary, and a whole lot of other people will grab a few calls with a few minutes that remain. If you want to join us, pull up a chair. Love to talk with you. 888-914-9149. That's your direct line into the conversation. And that will continue right after this.
Your Life Connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, flexible premium life insurance. You know, for less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Stand up with us and be unashamed of the truth. You are never alone. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, what a perfect bumper, right? You are not alone. We are here for you. God loves you. If you made the mistake of having had an abortion or been involved in it, just turn to God. Ask for his mercy. I'm speaking to somebody who has been through the horrors and the damage of that and has done just, God's using her life in a powerful way. And we have a few minutes left, so I thought I'd go to the phones to take a few calls today. I'm joined, as I said, by Catherine Glenn Foster. It's great to have her here with us. She just shared her riveting story. You can check her out. I believe it's, let me ask you for your website. I was going to take a guess at it. It's UAL.org, or what's your web domain for United, for Americans United for Light, AUL.org?
AUL.org, yeah.
AUL.org. I never know whether it's com or something else. AUL.org, Americans United for Life. And, Catherine, let's take a few calls. Dr. Fritz is listening in Los Angeles. He's got a couple comments for you. Hi, doctor. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thanks very much for taking my call. It is very fascinating that your guest said something interesting about the way that abortion is trying to be peddled as simple and safe. And pleasant, even. And it's remarkable. As I was listening, I recalled what the Nuremberg trials used as evidence, which was quite fascinating. The Nuremberg trials actually condemned abortion. It condemned Nazi abortion as, in their words, a crime against humanity, and abortion as an activity marking a criminal organization. Those are their exact words, verbatim. Wow. And I just find it fascinating that as part of the evidence in the Nuremberg trials was a document, a Nazi document, trying to convince Eastern European women that abortion was simple and safe and a pleasant affair. And it's fascinating how history just seems to rewrite itself.
Yeah, I never knew that, doctor. I didn't realize Nuremberg did that. Thank you for sharing that. And Catherine, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, that's part of the lie of the abortion industry, is that abortion is simple, that it's safe. They used to say, you know, safe, legal, and rare, and then they decided they didn't want it to be that rare anymore. But all throughout its history, abortion has never been safe. First of all, abortion is violence. Abortion is violence against the child. The child is meant to die in the abortion. And so that right there means it's illegitimate on every possible level. But it's also not safe for the woman, not for those after effects, but even during the process. You know, we put together a report where we went through all the state inspection reports of all the abortion facilities in America that were actually being inspected, because we know a lot were not being inspected. But we put together, through open records requests, all those reports that existed that we could get our hands on. And we just read through them and tabulated them and saw, okay, what kind of violations are there? Are these safe, clean facilities? What we found was appalling. Facilities where there was just unsanitary, disgusting conditions, you know, bodily fluids, fridges where, you know, drugs are being stored in the same fridge as employee lunches, in the same fridge as aborted remains. There was one Planned Parenthood where a sponge was being used to sterilize medical instruments for a week straight. Wow. Without ever cleaning the sponge. We're talking about failures, just dramatic, devastating failures in mandatory reporting where absolute children were being subjected to and sent right back into the same abusive situations that brought them to Planned Parenthood in the first place. Abortion, it's always been in the back alley in America. Codifying it, you know, legalizing it through Roe v. Wade, it did nothing. It just stayed there in the back alley. It stayed the same sordid industry it had been. And now we finally have a chance to get to the root of the problems that make women in fear and in distress, and all too often under pressure or abuse or coercion that make them turn to abortion. We can get to the root of that and get to the heart of how we can actually serve these young men and women.
That's beautiful. Hey, doctor, thank you for your call, too. I appreciate your input there.
And thank you.
Catherine, thank you for sharing so eloquently there. I only have a few minutes, so let me just grab another call or two here. Mary is in San Francisco. Mary, good afternoon.
Yes, hi. I'm not 62 now, but I had three miscarriages. Hmm. And my first miscarriage, we're just married, and, you know, you find out that you're pregnant, and you always say, oh, people, you have to wait three months or whatever before you tell anybody. We didn't tell anybody because we had to get, you know, focus what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I tell my mom that I'm pregnant, and it's wonderful. She goes, oh, congratulations. That night I go home and I start to hemorrhage, and I'm starting to have a miscarriage. So I call my doctor, but my regular doctor wasn't there. It seemed like sometimes the medical field just look at you like it's like you said, it's maybe removing a toenail or something. And I just said, hey, I don't know if I'm having a miscarriage. Oh, you're just 3 months along. You're just a new mom. Don't worry about it. Well, anyway, I was hemorrhaging out. I had to go to the hospital the next day. And they said, oh, you know what? You just miscarried. And that was it. Came home to the mother. Oh, yeah, I miscarried. And they didn't do any D&C or anything. So that was fine. It wasn't fine at all. It was just upsetting, and I had to go through it. I tried to talk to other people that have had miscarriages, but nobody had them at that time. So I just prayed, you know, please God, maybe one day I'll get pregnant. So I get pregnant 2 years later, and I'm about 4 months pregnant, and I went to a church that our Mother Teresa was at the church, and this friend of ours told us to come down there. And she got up to speak, and she just said, today, my prayers are for the unborn child, that the unborn child does not have a choice in this world. And she would like to pray for the unborn child. But I was just going to get my video camera out before she was talking. And she said, the reason why today is too much materialistic things, cameras and whatever. I said, oh, my God, I better put it down. I was 4 months pregnant. I met her after Mass, and she said, you know, I told her I was pregnant, and I'll do everything to keep this child alive. Then I had a great healthy child. Two miscarriages. Right. And next time, the medical field just said it was nothing. And I delivered the child as a miscarriage, you know, and it was fully formed. And the medical aren't going along with.
Yeah, Mary, I'm sorry for what you went through. I'm sorry for your losses there. Thank you for calling. I only have a minute left or two, so I just wanted to give you the opportunity to speak. And Catherine, I'm going to let you respond to her. I mean, look, the spectrum of those who suffer loss, whether it's miscarriage or abortion, you know, it's vast. There's a lot of woundedness there. I only have just a few minutes left. Is there something you want to recommend for women who have suffered miscarriage, abortion? What are the next steps to find healing?
Absolutely. You know, the loss of any human being is, it can be devastating. And especially when it's the most vulnerable human being in the womb and you're the mama, and it hurts your heart. Mary, thank you for calling in. Thank you for sharing your story. I am so very sorry for your losses. I'll pray for you and for your little ones, but there is healing out there for women who've had an abortion. There's healing out there for women who've suffered miscarriage. There are resources, there are books, there's good, you know, Catholic and faith-filled books out there. There's stuff out there so that it's not just a situation where you go to the hospital and they tell you, you know, no big deal, nothing to be done. At least it was early on. There are resources out there that will really affirm you and just validate how you're feeling and really take a good, you know, biblical Catholic view of that loss and just give you hope and prayers for moving forward. So there's so many out there. Yeah. You know, there's lists out there. Just go find those, and I promise it's worth it.
Well, Mary, thank you. Catherine, thank you. Mary, thank you. Dr. Fritz, thank you. I have just a couple minutes left. If you want more information on Americans United for Life, AUL, you can find that at AUL.org. As I wrap it up here, final thoughts from you, Catherine. The next chapter that lies ahead, I'm hopeful. I think America's going to be blessed by this decision. And we had a religious liberty victory today, too, with the case of Kennedy. So I'm hopeful. I think good things loom.
Yeah, good things are on the way. You know, I just think we're at an inflection point in American history. The Supreme Court has finally reversed the injustice of Roe. And it really restored hope for the fundamental human right to life. And I just know that we can do better than asking women and men to choose between their children and themselves. We need to stop trying to change women and trying to tell women that that their child is not a human being, is not, you know, valuable, infinitely valuable, created in the image of God, uniquely and wonderfully and beautifully made. And so, you know, as we look forward and we take a multi-pronged approach, we're going to be working in the states, we're going to be working at the federal level, we're still working in the courts, you name it, we're still engaged all in on this fight for life. And now it just has, you know, dozens more battlefronts, right? but I have so much hope because I know that now we are looking towards a future where every American has a chance to thrive. And it's just about, you know, the work it's going to take to get us there and to rebuild that culture of life.
Well, I'm grateful for all that you do. Keep up your good fight. Thank you for sharing your story. And I want to thank everyone who is joining me today. If you missed any of the conversation, you can go back to the archives and listen to Catherine Glenn Foster there or any of the great conversation we had throughout the day, okay? Just go to relevantradio.com, look for the Drew Mariani Show podcasts. Also, just a final note here, too. Of course, tomorrow, another great lineup of shows. Cale Clark's coming up in a minute here. But I do want to remind you, I'm heading out of the country. I'm going to be heading to Israel in October, and I've been notified that there's just a few seats remaining on the upcoming pilgrimage. If you want more information, you want to go to the Holy Land, you want to learn a little bit more, you want to join Kathy and I, all details are at relevantradio.com/Holy Land. Check it out, pray about it, and see what you can do. All right, if not, leave me your prayer intentions. I'll be taking them with me, and I promise that you'll be with me in spirit and in prayer. But again, relevantradio.com/Holy Land. Until our paths again cross, I'll be praying for you. I'll remember you, especially tonight, okay? Please pray for me. Have a great day. God bless you.